to something that isn't human. That means she's predisposed to the para-world. Curiosity, or being part of it, said Indali, her voice firming up as she went. It's not like Trish and Ness have gotten anyone to talk to them about much. You've all been dealing with adults so far. Why not the teenager? It couldn't hurt. Gus realized she was certainly right. It couldn't hurt. There wasn't anything else that he had to go on, and there were no leads. Trish and Vanessa had turned up even less than he had. All they'd managed to do was get hit on repeatedly and asked out, though the deputy who'd asked about Trish hadn't said or done anything as of yet.
Either Nick warned him off, or he's busy dealing with Sarah's misery.
Cutting the corner of a yard once he got closer to the grocery store, Gus leapt upward. Landing easily atop a roof, he ran across it and jumped to the next. From there, he bounced through a backyard, caught a shed, and flew toward a light post. Hitting it with a light pinging noise, Gus swung his legs out, let go, and spun across the intersection, neatly avoiding several cars passing through and waiting on each side. Landing atop a bush, Gus went deeper into the shrubs and started through another side yard.
Back corner?
Gus asked as he jumped a fence with a hop and a quick handhold on the top.
Yes. Do you know how hard it is to track you, by the way?
Serafina grumbled.
I would hope it'd be extremely difficult, said Gus with a chortle. Now imagine if I was actively trying to hide. I'm just running around right now. Mute it.
Gus wrapped himself up in his magic, cloaking himself until there was no trace of him left behind. Almost in the same spot where the teenagers had been the first time was a lone, beat-up sedan. It looked like it had been on its last leg 2 legs ago. It was likely being held together by Bondo, duct tape, and a prayer. Sitting on the hood, facing the dark shadows and bushes where Gus had been last time, waited a young woman. She had to be fresh out of high school, he guessed, like she was about to go to college or join the workforce. Then he realized she was wearing what appeared to be an apron that hung at her waist, the top half having been pulled up and over her head.
Waitress. Something like that.
Creeping closer, Gus inspected her a bit more intently. She was young and attractive. Her light brown hair was pulled back in a no-nonsense ponytail behind her head. There was wariness in her pale green eyes, a cynicism that came from living a worn life, stained in such a way that it was easy to spot in her, as if someone had put a black thumbprint between her eyes, like she'd been saddled with cares and worries that weren't her own.
How long does she normally wait around?
1 second, Indali responded. Gus imagined the two were talking or reviewing footage. Tilting his head to one side, Gus briefly considered poking into her thoughts. He was trying to avoid that at all costs, however. The last thing he needed was someone noticing that memories and thoughts were being raided. And after his recent close encounter at the bar, he wasn't willing to risk it. Poking into Nick's mind had been a mistake and a lapse of good judgment.
Until around midnight, then she packs it in and heads home. You've got about 5 minutes at most, Indali came back with.
And what exactly does she ask for?
She literally just sits there more often than not. Sometimes she'll say, I'm here, but that's about it, Indali answered. No idea what she's looking for, but clearly it's to at least contact you.
Thinking, Gus came up with the best answer, direct and as a boogeyman. That was what had attracted her here, after all.
Should I eat you?
Gus asked from the darkness, letting his horror magic creep into his words.
If you keep coming out here, you're clearly making yourself a gift.
The fear that shot out of her was intense. Sharp, almost like a piece of hard rock candy that refused to yield regardless of how you bit it, tinged with something else he couldn't identify, but quite delicious. Using that fear, Gus snapped a binding of magic around her arms and knees. With a jerk of magic, he brought her to the ground. She landed on her ass with a thump.
I accept the gift of you,
Gus said simply as he tightened his control. There would be no way for her to wriggle free.
I
am dinner,
said Gus in a hungry voice and then yanked again on the magic. The woman was pulled 5 feet away from her car, her shoulders on the ground now. Slowly, he began pulling her into the darkened bushes.
No, I want to know. I don't.
Her words failed her as her feet and ankles slid into the bushes. Her panic was rising to an incredible level. Gus paused to simply sit and enjoy the meal she was providing him.
We'll start with the toes,
Gus murmured, taking hold of her shoes and pulling them off her feet.
Please, I'm willing to barter. I want out of this shithole,
squeaked the woman. Having gotten one shoe off, Gus set it down to one side and contemplated how to proceed.
Why make yourself a meal if you want out?
Gus asked.
I'm not a meal. I have nothing,
said the woman in a choked voice that was followed by a sob.
You're gonna kill me. I'm gonna die here.
And why would you want to leave? This little city of yours seems quite mundane,
Gus asked.
Don't many people want to come to a place like this? Why wouldn't you want to be here?
Because that's exactly it. We all grow up and live here, and we never leave. You work at the few places you can, or you work at the plant,
whimpered the woman.
Steel plant, right? We checked it, didn't find anything.
Didn't find anything at all. Ness and Trish even applied there. The union isn't hiring at the moment. Not a hint of anything on the net or in the Fed database,
Indali confirmed.
Then go work at the plant. You're pretty enough that if you have some smarts, you can make that work for you,
growled Gus.
Everyone who works at the plant comes out different,
mumbled the woman, apparently having forgotten Gus had told her he planned on eating her.
Different?
Gus asked, a feeling of hope running through him.
Yeah, different,
said the woman with a sniffle.
My older sister, Janet, she wasn't the same after she started working there. Like a ghost of herself. She forgot a lot of things, too. I don't want to work at the plant, but I can't afford to live on my own just working at the diner. I want to barter and make a deal to get out of here. I just need a chance.
That feels like we definitely need to look deeper into the plant,
Indali muttered.
Try getting inside it.
Agreed. Does your father work at the plant?
Gus asked.
Yeah, he does. Mom used to work at the plant, but she got injured and she died,
said the woman with a hiccuping sob.
I'm looking after my sisters now, and Dad isn't really nice to them, and I need to get them out, and don't eat me, please.
Clicking his tongue, Gus put the woman's shoe back on and then adjusted it to make sure it fit right.
Take me to your home. Let's see if something is wrong with your father,
Gus murmured. Just because he hadn't sensed anything out of the ordinary didn't mean there wasn't. It just meant they'd have to start really digging into the locals.
You mean it?
Asked the woman as she lifted her head up. She looked down past her body toward where her feet were hidden in the bushes.
You'll help me? You won't eat me?
How could I possibly eat a woman trying to help her sisters?
Asked Gus honestly and dismissed his magic.
And your name?
I'm Lucy,
said the woman, propping herself up on her elbows.
Lucy Barrows. And, what do I call you?
Mr. Doc will do,
Gus said.
Now, let's go see your dad.
Lucy drove quietly, her hands locked to the steering wheel in a white-knuckled grip. The fear bubbling away inside her wasn't as strong as it had been, but it was certainly there. Except Gus wasn't the reason or the cause. From what he could tell, it was what Lucy expected to find at home.
Oh, I'm late,
she said when she pulled into the driveway of a small, quaint little home.
He's going to be mad if he catches me.
Gus glanced at the clock and saw it was 2 minutes past midnight. Quirking an eyebrow, he wondered if Lucy's father was the unbending and stupid type. He'd met the type often enough. Those without forgiveness or mercy. Hard-hearted fools who had no empathy in them. Turning the key, Lucy shut her car off. It rattled and whirred for several cycles before it finally shut off. To Gus, it sounded like it shouldn't ever start again, but given the general disrepair of the vehicle, that seemed to be the theme. Opening the door, Lucy got out of the car and awkwardly stepped to the side, looking around every which way.
What a sweetheart. She's waiting for me.
Slipping out of the car, Gus put his hand atop hers and gently shut the door. His touch caused Lucy to shiver as she locked her car. Holding her keys tight in her hand, she went to the door. Getting it open quickly, she pushed the door wide and stepped inside. Turning, she waited several seconds, more than enough time for Gus to get in, and then closed the door. Throwing the deadbolt and the doorknob turned, she locked the front door and then put her keys on a hook nearby. She looked relieved as her gaze swept the darkened interior. Moving quickly, she vanished into a hallway. Opening a single door, she stuck her head in, paused, and then closed the door. Moving to the second of three doors, she opened it and went inside. Once more, Gus followed her, entering what was apparently her bedroom. There were bits of color here and there, some small decorations, but not much. It was obvious at a glance that she lived a muted life that had little to no warmth or softness to it.
Sorry, I had to check on my sisters. They're sleeping,
Lucy apologized, looking around her room.
Are you there, Mr. Dark?
Yes,
Gus said.
Okay, good. Dad's not home, I guess. He'd normally already be all over me. Sometimes he works late at the plant and...
There was a boom as Lucy's door slammed open. The doorknob passed into a hole in the wall that previously existed, as if this weren't the first time this had happened.
Who the hell are you talking to?
Demanded a man who was easily 6 foot and 300 pounds. He had dark brown eyes, brown curly hair, and a pale complexion. Looking around the room, he saw no one else there.
And why the fuck are you late? You know you're not supposed to be late.
Dad, there's no one here. Please, lower your voice. The girls are...
Before Lucy could finish, and faster than Gus was expecting, the man slapped Lucy across the face with an open hand.
I'm going to...
Before the man could finish his sentence, Gus had smashed a hole into his mind, spearing it with a powerful burst of horror magic fed from the insane blast of fear from Lucy at what her father was likely going to do. Apparently, beatings, especially ones that couldn't be seen with clothes on, were a common occurrence here. They had been for quite some time. Lucy even took beatings herself that would have gone to her younger sisters. What Gus found in the man's mind about the plant was absolutely nothing, however, which honestly was rather enlightening. The number of memories, details, and thoughts that were all missing led to a rather shocking conclusion for Gus. They were definitely looking for the steel plant when it came to the likely entry point to the base beneath the city, because there was nothing in the man's mind at all about work. Not a hint, whiff, or stray thought. Nothing about hating his boss, co-workers who'd wronged him, a fridge thief, water cooler gossip, pointless meetings, emails that made no sense, or customers that people hated. No worries about parking spaces, cars being broken into, being late or early, missing lunch or a break, wondering about paychecks or overtime. There was none of that at any level or degree.
No one on the entirety of the planet has a mind like this. It's been scoured clean.
Yes, I would agree. It would seem our target is and has been the plant. We'll need to get inside it,
Indali agreed.
I wonder if having their minds wiped at the end of the day is some sort of business practice. It would certainly make it that much harder for someone to figure it out from the outside. Not even a chance to overhear anything.
Yeah, but I can't imagine it's healthy for a mind to be like this at all. We spend more time at work with co-workers than we do with our own family. It's why so many men and women cheat with people that they work with.
Once more, I would agree. Definitely seems to be the cause of some problems. And young Lucy did mention her sister's behavior changed.
In the dark recesses of the man's mind, Gus could see there was only one real thought about work, that he needed to get his daughter to start working at the plant sooner rather than later, that he would continue to punish her, make her work for her own money, charge her rent, and be awful to her until she did so. He needed her to go work at the plant, wanted her to, desperately.
Dark! What are you doing? Please, don't hurt him! He's my dad!
Lucy begged, her hands on her father's shoulders. The older man was standing upright, his body tense and stiff as a board, as if he had an active electrical current from the house traveling from his head to his feet. Snorting, Gus released the man's mind, but not before blanking him into a stupor, something that was more akin to a drunken bender. If anyone were to look into his memories, it would look like Lucy's father had drank until he blacked out. Collapsing to the ground, the man lay unmoving on the floor.
He's fine,
Gus said before Lucy could panic.
Just sleeping it off like a bad night out with too many empty bottles in his wake. And you were right. It's the plant. That's what's causing him to act this way, and also what likely changed his sister. His goal is to get you to work there as well.
Lucy
paused, leaning over her father, her hands fluttering in front of herself.
He's been pushing really hard for me to join them at the plant. Really, really hard. I guess that makes sense. What is it, exactly?
Doesn't matter. What does matter is that it's time for you to go,
Gus said, coming to a choice.
Start packing for you and your sisters.
He liked Lucy. She seemed like a nice young woman who was kind and trying to do her best for herself and her sisters. Gus could definitely understand trying to protect others, even if it meant putting yourself in harm's way. Using some horror magic, he snapped a spell around Lucy's head that would make it so she couldn't hear him.
What? I can't...
Lucy murmured, looking around her room. Then she suddenly stood up and marched to her closet.
Sarah, you've already hacked all my bank accounts, right?
Gus asked. He was almost positive she already had. Given her personality, she was becoming more clingy and possessive of him, and that she'd likely snooped through his life. He'd bet on her knowing everything about him.
Yeah.
Right,
Gus prompted when Serafina's voice fell off.
Yes, I did.
Great. I need you to park 80,000 of that blood money of mine into this girl's account. I'm sure you already tore her apart as well, right?
Gus asked.
I did, yes. You're not mad, are you?
Serafina asked, the sound of her keyboard clacking as her fingers probably flew across the keyboard.
Not at all. It's just who you are, how you personally express your interest and care. It'll probably get worse once we start sleeping together,
Gus admitted.
Speaking of, Your induction and orgy is next when we meet up, isn't it?
Serafina had declined to have sex before her orgy and contract, despite Chloe indulging repeatedly and often before her own.
Yes, it is. I'm really looking forward to it,
Serafina murmured.
Done. I put 100,000 into her account, non-traceable and without a trail. I made sure her father has no access to it, and there's no way for him to track her down either. The extra 20 grand is from me. I can definitely see myself in her if my mom and dad hadn't been who they are.
That's very generous of you. That's more than enough to get her and her sisters moving in the right direction. Thanks, Sarah. You're a good woman,
Gus said. Then he canceled the spell around Lucy's head.
Get your sisters and leave. Don't look back. Your bank account has more than enough money to get you anywhere you want.
What?
Lucy asked, looking up from the suitcase she'd been packing.
Leave. Move. Travel. Don't come back. Make a life. Get a job. Go to college.
Okay.
Lucy murmured softly.
Okay. I can do that. Thank you, Mr. Dark. Will I see you again?
No, you won't. He'll sleep until morning. Make sure you're gone,
Gus said, and walked over to the door to her bedroom. Opening it, he stepped through it into the hallway.
Thank you, Mr. Dark. I'll never forget you,
Lucy said before Gus closed the door. Gus needed to go talk to Vanessa and Trish. They needed to plan their next steps.
I'm already getting Mel, Janelle, and Chloe up. Don't worry about us, Bera. I'll get it ready, said Indali.
Thanks.
Chapter 16. Fools. Taking hold of Trish's shoulder, Gus gently applied pressure to it. He'd found that she would wake quite easily with just this. There was no shaking needed at all. Slowly, the lovely dryad's eyes slid open. They focused on him and began to slowly glow. Smiling at him, she reached up and laid a hand to his cheek.
Oh, hello, dear. You need a little more already? I'm tired, but flattered and very willing,
purred Trish.
Yes, I do need more,
Gus admitted.
But, I woke you up for work.
Oh, poo,
Trish said with a pout, her fingers caressing his jaw.
No time at all for something quick. I can be very quick.
They're already waiting on the line. Just waiting on you and Ness,
said Gus apologetically.
Oh, drat. Afterward, then. Just you and I. I like our three ways, but I want you to myself for a bit, just like Ness does,
Trish said, patting his cheek. Then she slowly sat up in bed, revealing that she was quite nude. She always slept naked, her stated reason being,
just in case you want some while I sleep, you can just wake me up with it.
Turning away from the beautiful woman who had way too much power over him sexually, Gus began to shake Vanessa awake. She was nothing like Trish and needed to be physically woken up.
Not right now. Have Trish first,
Vanessa complained, rolling toward him and putting her hand on his forearm.
Then come back for me.
You've got them well trained to being woken up for sex. I didn't realize you did it that often.
Serafina grumbled.
More like Trish has us trained,
Gus said under his breath and then shook Vanessa a little more.
Come on, my beautiful yellow. I'm not waking you up for fun. It's for work,
Gus said, raising his volume this time.
Even though I wish I was waking you up for fun.
Groaning, Vanessa sat up and started scrubbing at her eyes.
We're ready over here. Put your phone on speaker. I'll transfer myself into it directly, then connect everything up,
Serafina ordered, her voice still holding an edge of annoyance to it. Pulling his phone free from his pocket, he held it. Standing between the two beds, he imagined this was the best probable location for both women to hear it. Tapping the speakerphone, Gus cleared his throat.
We're here, he said.
Hello, Indigo,
Melody said in a sugary, sweet voice.
My love, I love you.
Hi, Rainbow. I love you too,
Gus muttered, glancing toward Vanessa and then Trish. Neither woman looked perturbed at his statement.
I hear you have news for your wives,
Melody asked, a smile clear in her voice.
Tell us.
Rolling his eyes, Gus shook his head.
Yeah, it's the steel plant that we're looking for here. Found someone who works there and dug into their head a bit,
Gus said.
I know we said it wasn't worth me skulking around in people's thoughts, but this was a good opportunity, and it paid off.
I'm so glad to hear it. Tell me, Indigo. Tell me sweet nothings and what you did. And when we're done, I want you to talk dirty to me over the phone.
Melody purred at him.
Tell me all the wickedly evil, nasty things you want to do to me.
There was nothing in his head at all about work,
said Gus, ignoring Melody to a degree.
Nothing about his boss, co-workers, parking lot, lunch, being early, late, overtime. Nothing. Not a damn thing. Which means he either doesn't have a job at all, which doesn't match his memories, by the way, or he's getting mind-wiped at the end of every day or shift.
The silence in the hotel room, as well as across the line, was rather intense. It felt heavy.
The amount of power a psyker requires to mind wipe is significant,
Indali murmured.
According to records, the plant employs 4,000 people in various roles, added Serafina.
In other words,
Melody began,
they'd need enough psychic power to mind wipe 4,000 people every day. That means a small group of 20 people, perhaps as strong as Gus, or hundreds of medium-grade psychers.
Gus hadn't actually considered that angle.
Holy shit. We're out of our league by a continent.
Yes, we are. But let's keep that between us, my Bera,
agreed Indali.
I know. You don't need to scold me, my weapon. I know.
You called me your weapon.
Well, you are, aren't you, my weapon?
Yes, I am. I'm your weapon. You're my bearer. We are inseparable. I can't imagine ever being in another's hand. I love the feel of your finger caressing my trigger. When you thumb my hammer back, when you push my cylinder down and eject my cartridges, I love the feel of your fingers against my handle, especially when you...
Weapon? This isn't the time, is it? You're gonna get me more worked up than I already am, given the response earlier from Trish and Ness. I enjoy firing you as much as you enjoy being fired.
Sorry, I had no idea that, you never said, well, okay, I'm very happy to know that,
Indali said, clearly flustered.
Not much else we can do with it other than digging deeper, I suppose,
Melody said. Gus had missed whatever had been said before that.
Indigo, you'll just have to try and sneak into the plant. Probably during the day. See what's going on there. Yellow, red, can you start focusing your efforts on that?
Of course.
Trish said with a small yawn and her arms stretched over her head. Gus had to keep his eyes on the phone.
Right, Yellow? My sweet.
Yes, not a problem. We've got this, Vanessa agreed, her cheeks coloring at Trish's comment. She also kept her eyes locked on Gus's phone, just as he did.
I'd suggest asking prominent members of the city in a roundabout way,
mused Melody.
They'll probably tell you what they can, given that you're both so lovely. With any luck, they'll let something slip. There's bound to be someone who knows more than they should, despite the wipes.
Got it. We'll start off with the sheriff, the mayor, and maybe some of the deputies. They all seem to have a crush on Trish, Vanessa said. I'm sure that we can get them to let something slip.
I've done nothing to encourage that other than exist. Nor will I do anything to encourage them to tell me something, even if it means we don't learn anything. That's not something I want to even consider. Men will take something like that and run with it for far too long, grumped Trish. At least they're not being stupid and driving past the hotel repeatedly, or trying to find out what room I'm in from the front desk.
That's not what I meant, Vanessa said quickly.
Nor I. None of us would want our beautiful and sexy Red to demean herself at all. You're our dryad, no one else's,
Melody said quite firmly on the line. There was a chorus of agreements from everyone.
Great. Then you two should get back to bed. You'll have a long day of running around tomorrow,
Melody said.
Gus, stay on the phone for a few minutes.
He knew what she wanted, and apparently everyone else did as well. Everyone quickly said goodbye, hung up, or in Vanessa's case, rolled over onto her side, putting her back to Gus. Gus said intelligently. Trish nodded her head slowly, her eyes starting to glow brightly as she stared at him. Then she crooked a finger and slid sideways in the bed. Putting the same finger to her lips, Trish gave him a knowing look and smiled at him. Apparently, she had ideas for Gus while he was on the phone with Melody.
My life kinda became something like a teenager's wet dream.
I rather like it, Indali countered. Always gives me something to watch.
Loud ringing slowly broke through Gus's sleep, interrupting a lovely dream he was having about what Trish had done to him last night. Clearing his throat, he rolled over in the bed and looked at the bedside table. Coughing twice more, he finally got the phlegm out of his throat and grabbed his phone. Looking at the screen, he realized it was Melody. Tapping the accept button, he brought it up to his ear.
Hey, love, said Gus gruffly. What's up?
Aw, that was such a sweet intro that it makes this all the harder,
grumped Melody, her words snapping Gus into a much more alert state.
Trish and Ness got arrested by a sheriff. Sarah intercepted his database polls. We've got their fake IDs in place, so everything's fine. The problem is, they're still in jail.
What?
Gus asked, clearing his throat again.
On what charges?
None at all. Looks like illegal detention, said Melody. Would certainly support the sheriff being in on this. The problem becomes that it makes it so much harder for them to reasonably look around and ask questions if we push to get them out too quickly. They can stick around if we let it run itself out, obviously, but I don't much like that.
What were you thinking?
Go raise a stink about Trish. Get her out. You've already established that she is your wife. Ness hasn't really been looked into as much as Trish. Not as pretty,
Melody admitted honestly.
In raising a stink about Trish, chances are they'll dump Ness too. Then you and Trish can just vanish and Ness can stay behind.
Really? That's rather complicated and built on a lot of assumptions,
Gus grumbled. He didn't like things like that.
How about I just go camp out at the station and make sure things go well? If they don't, I pop them out. If they do, we're fine.
Melody clicked her tongue, then took in a slow breath and held it. Seconds ticked by as Gus sat there, rubbing at his eyes with his free hand.
Fine. That works. It gives you all the benefits of looking innocent, too,
said Melody in a sigh.
I just don't like leaving our wives behind bars. That's so not right.
They'll be fine. I think you forget that Trish is a sorceress who cooked people alive, then complained about losing a finger because the nail wouldn't grow right,
Gus said honestly.
She's stronger than we think. We just treat her like glass because she likes it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right,
Melody grumbled.
But she's our glass,
snorting. Gus couldn't help himself. He started laughing.
Yes, she is. Don't you worry, Rainbow. Your indigo will go retrieve him, one way or another,
Gus promised.
Just be calm, all right?
Thank you, my indigo, my one true love. With you, I can accomplish anything. All I need is you,
Melody said sweetly, clearly leaning into the phone.
I love you.
Uh-huh. Love you, too. Gonna get going. See you later, darling Rainbow,
said Gus, and then he hung up the phone.
She's sitting here making cooing noises over the phone. Her indigo and red contracts are lit up like flares, said Indali. Could you not ramp her up so hard in the future?
Smirking, Gus got out of the bed and got ready. He needed to get down to the sheriff's station and check in on Vanessa and Trish. It didn't take him long to dress in his stalking clothes, pop the window open, and slip out there rather than the front door. He imagined the lobby would phone the sheriff the moment Gus left. This little city was all in it together, he imagined. In one way or another, they were all working together, knowingly or unknowingly. Making his way to the sheriff's station while cloaked, Gus kept to the ground and open spaces rather than traveling via roof and backyards. With all the movement and cars during the day, he was better disguised there while cloaked. A blur, a shift of items, or general sounds were far more likely to be muted or overlooked with a semi-truck driving by. Thankfully, there were no impediments to him getting to the station, nor getting inside. In fact, he was able to ghost right by it all to get to the cells in the back. Vanessa and Trish were occupying one cell between the two of them. There was no one else in a cell, and everything was calm and quiet. Easing up next to the bars, Gus took a look around. The cell was what you'd expect. Slick tiles, one toilet, a bench, and four beds. There was nothing else at all.
More like a drunk tank, a holding pen. Huh, I wonder what they're doing. Indali, does Sarah see any cameras in here?
A moment,
Indali responded.
No cameras, you're clear,
Sarah said in his earpiece.
The cops are all in the entryway and around the building. No one back here, which isn't very good, you know. That's some deliberate oversight failure. Wanna bet they get a lot of suicides in this place?
Wouldn't doubt it. Hey,
Gus said in a whisper.
You're not alone.
Oh, thank goodness, Trish said with a laugh. Well, I certainly feel much better now.
Coming over to where he'd spoken from, Trish sat down on the ground and stuck her arm through the bars. Her hand opened and closed twice in midair. Realizing she just wanted to hold his hand, Gus put his into hers.
Hello, Red.
Gus murmured softly, putting his brow to the bars.
Indigo, my love. Oh, so good of you to come. Yellow told me you'd come,
Trish said, gesturing at Vanessa with her left hand.
Said you'd never let any harm befall us. I must admit, I was still nervous, but she never lost faith in her love.
Blushing, Vanessa looked to the side as she walked over to the bars. Standing above Trish, it likely appeared as if they were having a conversation if anyone peeked in.
Yeah, I admit it. I believe in Gus, our indigo,
Vanessa grumbled. So, we got arrested. No charges, no investigation, nothing. Just confiscated everything on us. I made sure to ask if we could leave when we arrived. Then I asked what the charges were. Ended it with asking for our phone call to contact an attorney and told them that until that occurred, we were pleading the fifth and would no longer discuss anything with anyone. Gus nodded at that. Illegal detention sometimes provided police a way out if you didn't actively ask if you could leave. Otherwise, it was assumed you were there voluntarily.
How long?
Gus asked.
An hour or so,
Trish murmured, squeezing Gus's hand.
So, 70 hours or so at maximum, unless they want to get petty. This'll be dull,
Gus complained.
But at least we're together. Want me to pop the lock and just come in there with you?
Ooh, would you? That'd be lovely. We can sit on each side of you and snuggle while we wait,
Trish said, holding much more firmly to his hand.
I contemplated killing everyone here, but I didn't think that'd be good for our investigation.
Sometimes even Gus forgot that the lovely and bubbly Trish valued life about as much as it inconvenienced her.
If they try anything funny, I'm going to turn the building into a bonfire,
she promised.
And then they can...
There was a clack from nearby as the door to the station proper opened. Not letting go of Trish's hand, he did shift it down lower to appear more like she was just letting it hang through the bars. A young man in his 20s wearing a sheriff's uniform strutted into the room. He was attractive, with dark blue eyes, dark brown hair, and a strong-looking physique. Vanessa and Trish both eyed the man warily, but neither held any recognition in their eyes for him.
"Hey," said the man.
"It's Deputy Dipshit," Sarah says,
Indali offered. "Are you here to tell us our council has arrived?" Vanessa asked. Deputy Dipshit turned a full glare on Vanessa and stared at her. "If you aren't, then you have nothing to discuss with us, since you clearly don't have food for us," Vanessa declared. "We've invoked our right to legal counsel and aren't talking otherwise."
"You big city types always think you know the law,"
Deputy Dipshit said. "I can guarantee you that I know the law better than you do," Vanessa muttered with a shake of her head. Her fake ID in the system didn't list her as a police officer, which meant she couldn't just declare why she knew the law better.
"Idiots, I'm here to take Alina for questioning,"
said the deputy, indicating Trish.
"I refuse to answer anything and have asked for counsel," said Trish politely. "I believe that means quest—"
"Shut up!"
shouted the deputy. Pulling a keyring off his belt, he drew his baton with the other.
"You can come willingly for questioning or get dragged for questioning."
Squeezing Trish's hand, Gus stood up and waited. There was no way this little sack of crap would take Trish anywhere without him being there.
"Fine. I'll go sit in a chair while you ask questions and waste my time," Trish said with a shake of her head.
"Ah, smart and beautiful. Good combination," said the deputy appreciatively.
Rolling her eyes, Trish got to her feet and stepped out of the cell. Deputy Dipshit slammed it shut and then gestured toward one of the doors along another wall.
"Right over there, if you would. Number 3,
he said. Trish looked frustrated and annoyed, but not afraid or even nervous. Even if Gus wasn't here, she could more than likely take care of herself. He made it easier for her, but if she got tired or wanted to burn her way out of here, she obviously could. Going to the door, Trish tried the handle and opened the door. Gus slipped inside first before she could move in. Right behind her came Deputy Dipshit, who then closed the door. The interrogation room had 4 chairs, a single table, and what was likely a 2-way mirror. Indicating one of the seats, the deputy took the one across from it, slouching low in the chair.
"So, I hear you're married,"
asked the deputy. Sighing, Trish took the seat that had been pointed to, then folded her arms across her chest. She said nothing. Looking annoyed, the deputy shifted around in his seat.
"Where's your husband? I've never seen him,"
said the deputy. Trish nodded her head, a frown on her face. Once more, she said absolutely nothing to the slimy toad.
"Oh, come on. You can at least answer those questions, can't you? They don't have anything to do with you being here,"
the deputy said, trying to cajole her into talking. Trish blinked slowly and then sighed loudly. Tilting her head to one side, she made no move otherwise. She said nothing and wouldn't be baited into talking to him about anything. Gus had the feeling he wasn't here to actually question her, though. This seemed as though he wanted to talk to her more than anything else. Nodding his head, the deputy seemed to be considering the situation as a whole. His mind slowly worked through what was happening.
"Answer me when I ask you a question,"
shouted the deputy, suddenly leaning forward and slamming his hands onto the desk. Trish jumped at the sudden outburst, causing her to flinch away from him. She let out a quick flare of fear, then reined it in rapidly. She wasn't afraid of the deputy, but his sudden action had definitely scared her.
"I'll make you talk,"
threatened the deputy.
"Well, here we go, then."
Chapter 17. Limits. Breathing heavily, the deputy glared at Trish across the table. His hands were spread wide, and his fingers flexed against the table. Trish raised her eyebrows, watching the angry young man.
"May I go back to my cell now?" Trish asked after several seconds. "Because honestly, this is only going to get you in trouble once my lawyer does arrive. I have no doubt my husband is already aware of my arrest and has contacted them. It's more a question of when, not if, my lawyer does arrive."
Sighing, Trish shook her head and looked away into the side.
"Your friend really shouldn't have brought us here. I can't imagine your father will be very happy when he shows up to find out what's going on."
Trish finished and went silent.
So it was one of the deputies who got huffy about them asking questions. That, or they just wanted the two pretty girls in jail.
Unbelievably, the deputy slapped Trish across the face. The crack of his palm was loud in the room. Of everyone in his life, Trish had most stoked his baser instincts. His primal need to dominate and conquer. She was his woman, his and his alone. He knew that his predatory instincts were correct. He needed to guard her and their future children. Every time she locked his eyes with her own, she slammed him with that earthy sexual magic that dryads had. It called to the truth of whatever someone was. And Gus was a monster who hunted humans. A race of creatures who, more often than not, killed their prey just to feed on their fear of death. Roaring, Gus launched himself at the deputy. He had only a second to react as Gus drove him into the ground. Staring up into Gus's face was a frightened little man, in love with his own power and drunk off the feeling that he could do whatever he wanted. Gus, however, was proof made manifest that one could never be sure they were actually at the top of the food chain.
"No, don't!"
Gus didn't hear what Trish said. He was too busy carving tunnels into the deputy's mind, winding his way through the man's thoughts, memories, and beliefs. He was a grotesque, evil monster of a human, one who would make Gus seem practically heaven-sent in comparison. There was also a good bit of information about the plant inside his head. He didn't work there, but quite often he worked with everyone who came out of there. There had also been a number of instances where he'd been called up to the plant to deal with people who were problematic, people who hadn't belonged and had shown up unannounced, people who were never seen or heard from again. It also meant that Trish and Vanessa really couldn't ask many questions about the plant. This was a much more secure location than they'd originally thought it was.
"I know just what to do with you,"
growled Gus, even as the deputy began to shriek endlessly. Pulling his arm back, Gus smashed a right hook across the jaw of the man, sending him straight into unconsciousness. He really did know what to do with the deputy, too.
"No one's behind the mirror. I'm already removing the video feed,"
Serafina stated.
"Give me a minute. Don't leave yet."
"He shouldn't have touched you,"
growled Gus, not looking at Trish as he stood up.
Thank you, Indigo,"
Trish murmured from behind him. He felt her hands rest on his back and began to lightly pet him.
"It's okay. This is who you are. What you are. You're my Indigo, a proud predator, my boogeyman. I know what you feel when you look at me. I know what I do to you. It's okay. It's not wrong to feel that way. I like it. I want you to feel it. It's who I am as a dryad."
"You're a... You're not mad?
Gus asked, finally turning to glance over his shoulder. Trish was behind him, smiling with her eyes glowing. There was a red mark on her cheek where the deputy had struck her.
Of course not. I'm a dryad. I want to be possessed and marked. Now, get me back to my cell, and you do what you need to with the deputy, Trish said.
Then she leaned forward and kissed him briefly.
We're good. Get going,
Serafina commanded. Picking up the deputy, Gus casually flung him over his shoulder. Then he reactivated his stealth magic, pulling both of them out of view from reality. Walking to the door, Gus opened it and looked back out to the cells. There was nothing out of the ordinary. Moving over to the door of the cell where Vanessa waited, Gus used the deputy's key to unlock it, letting Trish back in.
I'll explain later, Trish said quietly with a hand wave at Vanessa. Everything's fine, Yellow.
I'll be back,
Gus muttered. Holding on to the deputy, Gus left. He had to take care of the deputy first and foremost. Then he wanted to get back to the cell and watch over Trish and Vanessa. Coming back to the station after disposing of Deputy Dipshit, Gus watched the sheriff's car pull into the front parking space. There was no disguising the fact that the sheriff looked pissed. His face was flushed, his hands balled into fists, and every movement looked sharp. He slammed his car door as he got out and adjusted his uniform. He had graying brown hair and dark brown eyes. He was also starting to expand around the middle, like so many aging men tended to do.
He must know about Trish and Ness, and he's not very happy about it. Huh. I wonder why. Hopefully he knows just how illegal all this is. If they're trying to keep a low profile, the last thing they want is something like this. The question becomes, does he apologize and let them go? Or try to do something even more stupid, like harm them?
Checking a growl, Gus sped up, getting in behind the sheriff as the man jerked open the door to the station. Before the door had even fully closed, the sheriff was muttering incomprehensibly.
Ooh, he's not just angry, he's furious. Roy! JR! The hell are you two?
Screamed the sheriff.
Oi! In here, boss!
Called a voice from off to the right. Stamping a foot down, the sheriff turned toward the voice and headed that way.
Explain to me what the fuck you two did, because what I saw on the computer and what JR told me over the radio was both stupid,
demanded the sheriff, stepping into what was an office.
Well, we, arrested the two women staying up at a...
Yeah, I got that part, but why?
Shouted the sheriff.
Because as far as I can tell, you're detaining them illegally.
Leaning over the desk, the sheriff slammed his palm down against the deputy's desk with a crack of flesh to wood. The deputy had been relaxing back in his chair when the sheriff had first entered. Now, though, he looked very unnerved. Moving forward, he hunched over his desk, his black hair dangling into his dark brown eyes and covering them.
We can hold them for 72, can't we?
Mumbled the deputy.
Sure, if you want to be a dickhead about it and raise their suspicions. And why are you detaining them at all? What did they even do?
They were asking about stuff, like the plant and about the city, and...
So? How does that matter at all? They're new here. They've spent almost every day running down jobs, rental houses, and properties. Even going down to the damn local bank to talk about getting a mortgage. Why in the hell do you think they wouldn't ask about the plant, huh? It's the single biggest thing we got. What kind of fool looking to move in wouldn't ask?
But JR wanted to detain him,
admitted the deputy.
And why is that?
Demanded the sheriff, punctuating each word with a stab of his fingers into the deputy's shoulder.
Cause he wanted to talk to him. He said he fell in love with the white-haired one and
wanted to detain her so he could talk to her?
Screamed the sheriff.
Oh, my sweet sonny asshole! My boy's gonna be the death of me! And where is he? He's not back there right now, is he?
No, he was, but he left. The women are in their cell. They apparently didn't see him come or go.
Explained the deputy.
Well, thank fuck for that. The last thing I need right now is him bringing down an investigation on our heads. Now,
the sheriff said, standing upright.
Get those two the fuck out of here and apologize profusely to the point that you're on your goddamn knees licking their shoes. If you don't recall, we need more people moving in. It helps, remember?
I remember,
grumbled the deputy, pushing his chair out and standing up.
Do you? Because I swear you don't. You don't remember a fucking thing. And I'm betting those two smart women in there, who we could have sorely used, you idiot, are gonna bug the fuck out. Why the hell would they stay in a place like this when the local officers arrest them for no damn reason, huh?
Muttering under his breath, the deputy left his own office.
I swear the fuck, I'm gonna have to do something about that boy,
mumbled the sheriff. Slapping the desk one more time, he left the office. Deciding to follow the sheriff, since he'd said that Ness and Trish would be fine, Gus trailed the man into his own office. Walking inside his office, he flicked the door shut unexpectedly as he passed by, sending it bouncing into Gus's knee. Wincing at the pain, Gus ignored it and slipped into the office, moving into the corner. Looking at the door frame, and then leaning out to look around, the sheriff was clearly confused. Holding on to the door, he tried closing it slowly. It obviously did so without issue. Opening it, he then closed it again. Shaking his head, the sheriff moved behind his desk and sat down, the chair creaking ominously. Pulling open a drawer, the man took out a cell phone that looked like a burner phone to Gus and then tapped a key on it. Holding it up to his ear, the sheriff moved back and forth slowly in his chair.
Hey, got a minor situation,
the man said to someone who must have picked up on the other end.
Yeah, my idiot boy arrested two pretty girls for no reason other than they were pretty.
Grimacing, the sheriff nodded his head and then rolled his eyes.
Yeah, I know. I'll take care of it. Just going to release the girls. We could have used them as part of the whole, but I think they'll leave,
the sheriff reiterated. Sitting there, he didn't say anything for a moment.
Yeah, I do think they'll leave. From what I saw when I ran them through the system, they're smart girls, couple degrees each. Husband is apparently a writer, just sits in his room all day. Looks like the Fed bombing scared him out of the big city. Would have been useful.
Reclining backward, the sheriff sighed and looked up at the ceiling.
Got it. You don't have to keep saying it. I'll take care of it, all right?
The sheriff muttered.
Serafina's already tracing it. We should have something to go off of by the time he hangs up,
Indali said.
You know, having you two in my head isn't so bad after all.
Well, thank you, Bera. I'll be sure to relay that back to Sarah.
If they stay, I mean.
The sheriff paused as someone apparently cut him off.
Fine, fine. All right. I'll keep an eye on him. I don't see what the problem is,
the sheriff argued.
That's all, though. That was the issue.
Lowering the phone from his ear, the sheriff sighed and then let the phone drop down to his desktop. Cracking it open along the edge of the frame, he casually scooped out the electronics inside. Gus couldn't quite follow along, but the man seemed to rip small components free of a circuit board, yanked the battery, and pulled a wire free as well. There was a creak of a floorboard just beyond the door, followed by what sounded like a door slamming shut. Picking up the phone, he paused and looked toward the door. Footsteps headed back toward the office door and stopped outside of it.
Boss, they're gone, but, I think we might have a problem,
said the deputy in a muffled voice.
Apparently, J.R. came in and, tried to question the pretty one after they asked for an attorney.
God damn it, what?
The sheriff shook his head, glaring down at the burner phone on his desk. Grabbing his trash can, he casually swept the remains into the bin. Standing up, he stepped away from his desk and went to the door.
Okay. And what did they say? Did it seem like they were going to cause a fuss?
The sheriff asked. Not hesitating, Gus moved for the desk and scooped up the entirety of the burner phone's remains out of the trash can. Stuffing it all hurriedly into his pockets, the bits and pieces vanished into nothing. Unfortunately, the sheriff shut the door as he left, closing Gus inside. Looking around, he realized there wasn't a quick or easy way out, but that the window was likely the best option. It was the least likely to give away any noise, and the most likely to go overlooked. Sliding it open, Gus popped out the screen and then slithered through the window. Pulling the window shut again, he wouldn't be able to lock it, but that was the least of his worries. Sliding the screen back in place, Gus moved around the side of the building to the front. Trish and Vanessa were walking down the street, away from the station. They weren't waiting around, and they looked like a pair of people who wanted nothing to do with anyone. Both the sheriff and the deputy were standing at the curb, staring at the two women as they left.
Fucking shit, JR. He's going to make me have to do something I don't want to,
grumbled the sheriff.
And where did he go? You said he wasn't back there.
Well, he wasn't. He did go back there, but he wasn't in there when I checked. He was gone,
muttered the deputy.
Your boy is gone. I took care of him. He won't be bothering anyone ever again. His fate has long since been sealed.
Turning away from both Trish and Ness, as well as the sheriff and his deputy, Gus moved off into a back alleyway. He wanted to know right now if he'd gotten all of the phone pieces and if it was even worth carrying around.
Sarah, you watching?
Gus asked quietly as he eased up beside a dumpster. He began to pull everything out of his pocket.
Watching? Yes. Seeing anything? No, Sarah grumbled.
Pulling out his phone, Gus flipped open the kickstand and set it to one side. He began laying out all the bits and pieces of the burner phone in front of it.
Tap into my phone's camera. Here's everything I got from the burner,
said Gus as he finished emptying his pocket.
Oh, yes. Let's see, said Serafina. Get me closer to that circuit board.
Picking up his phone, Gus moved the camera over the top of the pieces.
Okay, no. This is garbage. He broke it up very well. It'd take more work to repair it, only to find out not much more information than I already have,
complained the spirit of knowledge.
Which wasn't very much, by the way. It was a burner phone calling a burner phone. I imagine both were destroyed as soon as the call was over.
Well, that at least gives me a direction,
said Gus as he picked up all the parts and pieces again.
It does?
Indali asked with some confusion.
Yeah, follow the sheriff. Read his thoughts, see what he's about,
Gus explained. Lifting the lid of the dumpster by only an inch, he stuffed the pieces of the burner in one at a time, squeezing them through and trying to disturb the scene as little as possible.
Read his mind, see if I can't get a peek of something, because after today, I think Ness and Trish need to leave. They can't stay here, not without raising suspicion. If they expect them to leave from the treatment, it'd be odd if they didn't. And it sounded like whoever was on the other line felt that way, too.
Yeah, they did. I snuck into the phone and heard their side of the conversation. They weren't too angry, but they were certainly annoyed. They wanted Trish and Ness watched if they stayed,
Serafina confirmed.
Sounds like they're leaving, then. And I'll be staying,
whispered Gus.
Trish can stay, argued Indali. She has more than enough power to mimic your own stealth magic. Hers is just far more likely to get spotted if she tries to go into more restricted areas than yours. But you did get Janelle through stuff like that. You could do that again, couldn't you?
Gus hadn't quite explained that he'd been carrying Janelle around as if she were a shirt he was wearing. The idea of trying to run around with Trish attached to his front or back like that seemed counterproductive to getting anything done.
I agree. You need someone there just in case. Trish can assist. Vanessa can come to assist us in turn after dropping the car off.
Serafina concurred.
I'll talk to Melody about it. Give me a moment.
Grimacing, Gus realized he wasn't going to be able to back his way out of this one. Because they were right. He did need someone who was physically here with him who could assist him. As useful as Indali and Serafina were, they weren't actually here. They couldn't help him with anything that wasn't information.
Not to mention, Trish is a sorceress. She's capable of doing a lot of things with just that alone. It's just... it's hard to be around your personal nymph when you're alone with her.
Yes, I don't envy you that. Even I have my limits. Trish doesn't.
Chapter 18. Ever Deeper. Moving through the darkened superstore, Gus stopped in front of the canned goods.
Oh, there's a lot I can do here,
Trish said, reaching out and picking up several cans.